thank you for joining us. Here is your host, Colin O'Connor.
Have you ever for a moment thought about death's eventualities? Is it feasible to find ourselves in a spirit prison after death, as mentioned by the Apostle Peter in 1 Peter 3:18 through 20, where it is believed Peter touches upon the work from the book of Enoch? Or could passing lead us into paradise, or somewhere entirely peculiar? I hope to interview others about this topic for future shows. Tonight, we have a guest who is blazing brightly as an Amazon best-selling author. He's received the Gold Award from the prestigious Mom's Choice Awards and has won the Golden Wizard Book Prize in 2023. Born in North Carolina after high school, he attended college and pursued a degree in education, but later decided to change course and follow his dream to become a novelist and children's author. He's an ordained minister and mental health advocate, spends his free time reading and helping the less fortunate in his community. He's passionate about spreading Christian messages through his writing. He enjoys watching science fiction and superhero movies and collecting comic books. He is the author of the newly released fiction fantasy book, The Crossing, A Wayfarer's Chronicles. Let's welcome Jay Edwards Holt to the show. Thank you, Jay, for being with us this evening.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So, wow, where do we begin? It was such an amazing book. You said at one point that this book had been on your mind for quite some time. What caused you to think of such an amazing story?
Let's see. It really kind of came to me back in, I believe it was 2019. I was actually, I was driving down the road one day, and I was, a lot of times that's when I'll get these ideas. And, I just was trying to think of, or not really trying to think of story ideas, but I was thinking of some. And, I just thought about the ocean and just kind of, traveling a long ways and like ghosts and afterlife and all this stuff. And then, suddenly after that, the ideas just kind of started popping in my head, and, I kind of went with it. And then, pretty soon I was thinking about characters and all that. And, around that time in 2019, I went ahead and started, working on the first draft of it. And, I got that finished probably right before the pandemic started, and but at the time I was working on some other stuff, so I put it aside, and then I revisited it early last year and decided I was going to polish it up and try to release it this year in 2024. And I just got rolling on it. I made a lot of changes, a lot of edits. Change the ending, change some characters, made them more interesting, stuff like that. And and I met my goal ultimately, which was to release it in January of this year.
Wow. So what for the characters, what brought those to mind? Like, how did you come up with like the roles of the different characters and what they would be doing in the story?
I originally started, with the idea, the premise was that, of a ship that carries souls to the afterlife, and there was always going to be a living girl that comes on board, and the captain was going to deal with that. And, it was going to be a conflict between him and whoever was closest to him. Originally, it was going to be the first mate, but then I did some research on pirates and ships and stuff like that, and I decided to go ahead with the title of quartermaster for Graves and have him be kind of the antagonist early on. And so then I just kind of started developing them from there. And later on I went in and I had been kind of picturing the main character as a Spanish man. And so I went in and I changed his name to Amadeo, and I gave him kind of a Spanish origin because that was just how I was seeing him in my head. And I think that brought a little more, you know, depth to the character overall.
Yeah, I don't want to give up too much to the readers. This is such a wonderful book. It was something that you pick it up and you start reading. It one chapter after another, and you want to know what's in the next chapter. Something that I really liked in the book was how these things that were in the ocean, like they came upon a storm, and I won't share too much of that, but at one point the girl has noticed this thing following, and it was truly amazing how these things were kind of waiting for them, and so they knew that they had to, they couldn't just do what they wanted. They had to, it was kind of like their sacrifice for the wrong things or the things that they weren't forgiven for in life. And it just seemed like they had been doing it for so long that it was like they were paying the price, and everything had just become dull to them. How did you come up with that, with those, the creatures that are in the story?
I think you might be talking about like the Soul Eaters, maybe.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And the other flying,
Yeah. The crows. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was just, with sea creatures, I was trying to think of, the most terrifying thing I could possibly think of. And with these characters being dead, they wouldn't have much to fear other than something that could, consume their soul. And of course the crows as well, they're kind of, from the pits of hell. So they can put fear even in the dead people as well. So, it was really just a matter of coming up with something that would, terrify even like dead people. So.
Wow. Yeah. It was pretty amazing. And then at one point a friar was on the ship, and that was amazing. I wondered what he possibly could have done that, would have put him on the ship. But they always picked up these passengers from one side and took them to the other side. Anytime something had happened to one of them, another one, such as one of the workers on ship, would reappear. Can you explain that a little bit? Like what was going on in your mind when you created that part where they would just, if something happened to one, they would just kind of, I thought that was amazing because it was almost as if like, no matter what, this job's going to be done and you're going to continue to live this life until your time is due.
Yeah. That's basically it. They were, it was something that had to be done. It's something that the gods put forth, and they kind of, established it to be. And even if one of them were to give it up early or whatever, they would be replaced immediately because, it's something that has to be done. And so, they've always got, someone's always dying. So there's always someone that can kind of come in and replace someone else. And typically the people that would be, working on the ship would be people that may have committed certain sins and kind of not gotten to ask for forgiveness, but kind of wanted to or something like that. So, but yeah, it's kind of like a nature thing. It's always going to be someone there.
And one of the characters one of the main characters on the book, he describes how the passengers and the workers on the ship, how they look compared to this living girl that comes on ship, and that was truly amazing how he gives such a great description of what they look like and how you know, it got me thinking, if I die and I'm not forgiven of my sins or, you know, or something, how I may look and compared to how I look now. And so what on the side of the living, can you kind of explain what was going on there with as they appeared, and there was just, they were surrounded and just kind of waiting. Can you explain that area a little bit?
Yeah. So basically the sort of, the book takes place in this fictional universe that I've created. So it's kind of connected to some other stuff, but it's also a standalone. But basically the way things work in that universe is that, when humans die, they are typically taken to that realm, which is the crossing. They're typically taken to that realm, and they're taken, their souls are taken on the ferry across to the other side to be judged. And so, you know, basically after they die, they kind of just wind up there. Their souls end up on a shore, and the ferry comes and, you know, picks up a new batch basically every day or every how many hours.
And they had to, and they were worried that if they didn't make it across on time, that they would pay the consequences for that.
Yeah. They, you know, they are dead, so they don't have to worry about somebody killing them, but they are afraid of, you know, consequences for their souls. You know, they've been instructed that, you know, or, you know, they know that they have to get everybody across on time, you know, or they could face consequences from the monsters or, you know, like the gods themselves or something like that.
So in the beginning, and I noticed this in the book, and then, you know, it goes throughout the book. What is the age of Trigalda? Is that correct? Am I saying that right? Trigalda?
Yeah, that's Trigalda is the name for Earth in that fictional universe, and it's one of the last ages in that particular timeline, the age of Trigalda. I'm currently working on a mythology book now that kind of ties all of that together. But yeah, Trigalda is mentioned as being Earth in some of the other books.
Wow. Yeah, that was amazing. And it goes, fairly quickly. And this all happened within a few months. This whole story kind of takes place from, it appears like here it starts off in September, and then all these events happen after this girl arrives. It just seems like from the story that they were all kind of just in a frozen state, and then as soon as she comes on, it kind of just moves through in a matter of months.
Yeah, pretty much. I think with the prologue, it starts out, and then when you pick up in chapter one, he's been, the captain has been doing the job for over 200 years or so. He's been doing it for centuries.
Wow. And then, I won't go into that, but the girl doesn't have a name.
Correct.
Because in her family, they pick their own names. And I won't spoil that for the listeners. And then what, now with the orphanage, you know, so she ends up going to an orphanage, and this mistress or that's mm-hmm. what they called them, takes away her special item. Something I didn't understand quite is how she went from the cellar to, you know, after she retrieves her item, she jumps back into the cellar and then she's under a pink sky.
Yeah, it's you know, it's kind of just it's basically a crossing into a different world type of thing. And, you know, she talks about how her mother tells her that she's, you know, always where she's meant to be. So, you know, it's kind of a phenomenon of crossing into another world accidentally. But, you know, it's explained as just being where she needs to be at the right time in that regard. So, yeah, that's it. Pretty much just, you know, implying that we're where we're meant to be at the right time.
And I like that she, throughout different parts of the book, she calms herself down by saying she remembers her mother telling her that no one is out of place, that everybody right. is where they're supposed to be. And I find that truly hopeful, you know, and not just in the book, but in our lives to hear that.
Absolutely.
So they have, so in towards, let's see here. So they have to take payment. So when I first thought of them taking payment, I didn't know that they would have to actually cough something up. And I thought that was really special because, you know, to have to come up and then there's one person that comes and they really have a difficult time, and then finally they get it up but there was a special lady that came on and gives the captain an extra coin. And mm-hmm. and was that who they see later on, is, you know, when they're uh-huh. trying to make it back to the beach, is that who helps them? I guess I didn't quite get who was helping them at that point when they were kind of lost.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was yeah. her. Wow. Uh-huh. So, and then there was another ship, and that ship is that really them, or is that actually other people? I mean, that was pretty interesting how you put that in. It was almost like a mirror.
Yeah, it's kind of like a mirror image. Basically what it is kind of just a like a glitch or a hiccup in reality, because the living people are not supposed to be in that realm at all. And so it's, you know, when you mix something in with something that's not supposed to be, it kind of causes unwanted consequences. And, you know, their version of a glitch in the system is seeing their own reflection and, you know, coming into contact with themselves.
And that kind of starts out when he doesn't see who his passengers are, right? Down there. So what with the coal cellar, so now later on in the story, she kind of goes back, and this girl that she was friends with comes into the scene in this coal cellar, so she kind of bounces back. What was happening there? Because it was real, you know, we're going along here, and then all of a sudden she's back there again.
She was dreaming at that point.
Oh, she was dreaming. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I was trying to figure that out. I was like, okay. So then, and then later on she sees her friend again. I mean, it doesn't say in the book, but it kind of tells some of it. But what did happen? I mean, if you're able to share some of that, what did happen to why her friend comes later on?
It's kind of a little bit left for the reader to kind of wonder about and interpret. But essentially, you know, it was a fire at the orphanage, and, you know, most of them there were killed. And the girl Bess, she barely escaped, but she kind of, you know, she died afterwards, in like a thorn bush or whatever, where, you know, from the, I guess, the smoke inhalation and stuff. But yeah, it was kind of hinted at that the orphanage like burned down in the night, but not really explained why. You know, it's just just like it could have been arson, or, you know, could have been just dry weather or something like that.
Wow. It kind of leaves it to you to kind of, I mean, it does kind of say a little bit of that, but then it also kind of leaves you wondering exactly the rest of it. So what was with the hypnotist? What was that something? I mean, every quartermaster thought that she might be a hypnotist. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, it's kind of like, back in medieval times and stuff, you know, a lot of times they, you know, thought that an intelligent girl or woman was something mystical, you know, and, you know, with her being there looking, you know, all alive and everything and kind of entrancing the captain, as they thought, and everything, and trying to entrance them, you know, they thought perhaps she was hypnotizing them or trying to cast a spell on them or something, that she was, you know, maybe she was had evil intentions and that she was somehow manipulating them, is what they believe.
Wow. And then later on, because this girl is on the ship, things start to go awry. They have, just like other people up here, food always is refilled, water is always refilled, and that starts to go sour. What brings the storm? You know, can you explain that? I mean, you know, is that something that you'd like to share? I mean, you can share what the storm is about, and you know, what brings that about in the story.
Yeah, like the maelstrom.
Yeah.
Yeah. pretty much just, you know, just the constant glitching and the constant deterioration of everything. It all culminates in a big cyclone there in the water that's really not supposed to be there.
Something that I guess I didn't understand too in the book a little bit was when they first try to get her off the ship, because they're like, she's got to go. They're trying to pull her, but they look back and she's still there. But then later on, she's able to jump. Was there a reason for that? That at one moment the ship's keeping her there, and then the next moment she's able to take off?
what are you referencing when she takes off?
They set up that scheme to try to keep her friend on board, and then they find out and they're like, no, she has to go. And then she decides to go after her.
Mm-hmm.
Before, when they were when Graves, or Graves and Amadeo were trying to get her off, Graves was trying to get her off. It was like they would try to pull her onto the bridge, and they would look back, and she would still be where she originally was. It was almost as if she was. Frozen, you know, like there was no way she could get off the ship. But when that happened, mm-hmm. Was that just also because like the everything was just going slowly, you know, glitching, and in the beginning it just she wasn't able to leave, and then now because things have changed so much at this point, she was able to.
Yeah, I think it was kind of like the sort of nature's way of kind of wanting to get rid of her at that point. You know, at first it thought that she was a passenger, so she couldn't really leave or whatever. And then, you know, because the fairy kind of had an intelligence of its own in the same way. And so at that point, you know, it kind of realized what was happening, what was coming. And so it kind of, you know, took the opportunity, I guess, to let her off if it could.
And boy, that so they lose their, so they get another, they get another quartermaster,
mm-hmm.
and he is, man, he is a character, isn't he?
Yes, he's not a good person.
Well, he does some really horrific things, and I was thinking to myself that, you know, the captain's pretty forgiving because he seemed to have it in his mind pretty much what was going on, but he was still kind of second guessing himself and wanting to continue to find more information, it seemed like.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I probably would have just tossed him overboard.
Yeah, he should have.
So what in this story, does this story reflect anything in real life?
No, it's entirely fiction. You know, it's something I came up with, and you know, it just, the idea of the story, you know, really touched my heart, and so I had to write it. You know, it was that kind of thing.
Well, it's really a great read. So at the end, what can you kind of talk about the end a little bit? Whatever you'd like to share.
Is there anything you want to know specifically, or you just want me to kind of talk about the end?
Yeah, you can just kind of talk about the end. I'll let you share.
Okay. Well, the ending, the epilogue it's one of my favorite parts and the thing that comes right before it. You know, it was just something I wanted to kind of, create a love story. You know, obviously it's not a romantic love story, but it's a love story between a father and a daughter type of figure. And so I wanted to emphasize that heavily in the epilogue. And, you know, the epilogue involves, characters being back in the land of the living. And, the girl decides the name and things like that. And, the ending, just really touched my heart. I enjoyed writing it, and I still love reading it myself. But I went back and forth on some different endings, but I settled on that one because I felt like it really had the most impact.
What were some other ideas? I'm kind of curious now. What were some other ideas that you had for endings?
There was one where I was thinking about having them to start an orphanage of their own or something now that they were back, and a couple of different things like that. But, you know, I decided to just go ahead and kind of keep it there, you know, with a little bit simpler than that.
So how does this, from this coal cellar, how does this girl, because in the beginning it was death, you know, he's being asked to repent, and then, you know, everybody on ship is dead, and then this girl arrives, and that was amazing to me that, you know, she goes from a coal cellar to being on the beach. And was that like a porthole in the coal cellar?
Yes, it's kind of like, you know, an accidental stumbling into a wormhole type of thing, you know, where you it's like it's something meant for you to experience, and you know, so you get put where you're supposed to go. And you know, there was, of course, you know, her coming on meant the redemption of the captain. You know, it meant kind of a growth for, you know, Graves, and a lot of the crew kind of grew in their character as well. You know, they became sort of softer because of it. And ultimately the ferry itself, you know, everything was returned back to normal once those two had left for good.
Wow. Yeah, truly an amazing artwork. I really enjoyed reading it. Now, you grew up in, I mean, how was it growing up in where you grew up and everything, and what led you to decide to write books?
Well, you know, I always, in elementary school, I enjoyed doing a lot of writing and reading and stuff, and it was something I kind of continued a little bit through high school, and, you know, I wrote some stuff in high school, and then when I got to college and stuff, I just kind of forgot about it, aside from, you know, writing occasional papers and stuff, and I ended up going to school to be a teacher. Everybody's telling me that's what I should do, so I did that. And I worked in the education system for probably 8 years. And I went over to a friend's house one day, and her father had written a book, and it kind of just reminded me of, like, oh, yeah, you know what? I always kind of wanted to do that. And so I got to thinking about some story ideas, and I researched, you know, what you had to do to write a book, and I went ahead and got started on that. And, you know, I just kind of, I put everything into that, and, you know, it ended up one book and then another and another. And, you know, I just got, you know, addicted to it, you know, and I, you know, I love it.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, truly you have a gift here. I appreciate you coming on tonight and sharing everything about your book. I really enjoyed it, and I encourage other people to read it. It was really gut-wrenching. You know, from the moment that she's on the carriage going to the orphanage, and then in the orphanage, and you can, the way you describe it so well, how we picture orphanages, and especially during that time, cold and dark and poor, mm-hmm. and poor, and with a mistress, a lady of that controls the orphanage, who's mean and wicked, and uses, there's another child in there that she uses to kind of control things, and she gives him special privileges. You know, and then to the, where she arrives on the little island, and then at a moment you're just like kind of like relieved that, you know, she's out of that at least.
Yeah.
Even though she's not in a much super much better place, it's better than where she was at. Yeah, truly. And then are you going to continue? You said you have another, you know, this Trigalda. You're going to have like a whole world thing done with this, or?
Yeah. So far I've done, let's see, I think 13 books that are set in this fictional world called the Seven Branches of Rigorum. And Trigalda is one of the realms. And, of course, Maravon is one of the realms, too, which is the one that the crossing takes place in. It's like an ocean realm where where souls are sent to be carried to the afterlife. And I've done a lot of expanding on the world, you know, with my Little Mimbic Treasure series, the Barren World series, and several other books. And, you know, I'm kind of working on building that universe even more. I've got a book, I'm almost finished with it. It's going to be like it's going to have pictures, like a visual guide, with the different, species that live in the seven branches, and some creatures that I made up myself, and like a mythology that goes along with it as well.
Wow. Yeah, that'll be truly interesting to read. And then, yeah, this book got me. You know, because we always, there's moments where, you know, I believe that when we die, you know, and from what we've been taught that, you know, Jesus Christ died for our sins, we're going to go to heaven. But there's that, like I said, in the Book of Enoch, you know, and then there's, you know, there's thoughts of, well, what if I'm not, you know, I haven't been purified, or what if, you know, and this book really, you know, opened up that idea and gave me the thought of, what if I was stuck doing this captain's job for so long to pay for my, you know, the price? That would stink.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be, you know, pain and always wondering when it's going to be over to move on to the next phase or whatever, but not to the phase that could be that the others are going to, you know, definitely. Yeah. I wouldn't want to go there. But yeah, truly it was an amazing book. Is there an email? I mean, how do people get your book? Can you tell us the information where they can find your information in your book in case they want to get there?
Yeah, all of my books, you can find links to them at my website. It's jedwardsholt.com. And then most of them are also available on Amazon. You can go to Amazon and either search the book title or search J. Edwards Holt, and they'll pop up. As far as getting in touch with me, anybody can get in touch with me at my author email. It's j@jedwardsholt.com. And then social media, too. I've got Twitter, Facebook, all those are at J. Edwards Holt.
Awesome. Well, thank you coming on tonight. I appreciate you spending some time with us, and I'm looking forward to reading some more of your artwork, and it's been a pleasure talking to you tonight.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and thank you for your kind words on the book as well.
You're welcome. I wish you a good night.
Thanks, you too.